The following is a KOZE podcast broadcast. The Snake River Gazette. This weekly half hour that brings the rich history of the place we call home to life. Colorful characters and little known facts that will surprise you. And the stories of extraordinary people.
Your master of ceremonies.
Keith Warnock.
From this week 81 years ago, a global conflict nears its climax, and an excerpt in the Lewiston Morning Tribune reflects our country's pride and determination. In the days of early Lewiston, an ambitious young man enters town and never leaves. While amassing a fortune in business here, he's also a driving force for his communities. A Lewiston Historic Preservation Commission marker honors his local legacy. He fights especially hard for one cause and deserves a lion's share of the credit. It's the project that will revolutionize our Twin Cities. When the stranger ambled into our town that day long ago, could he have imagined he'd never leave? Much less have his very name etched into Lewiston history, literally. 19-year-old Marcus A. Means loved an adventure. It was late summer 1881 when one of our last pioneers first rode into Lewiston on horseback. And from that very first day, it seems he staked his future here on the ripe opportunities in our bustling town of 800 people. It wasn't long before vision came to fruition. Means hired Lewiston architect J.M. Knave to build a structure for the various enterprises he planned. Finished in 1906, the white press brick Means Building was constructed on the former site of Valley Lumber Company. It served as headquarters for the Mark Means Seed Company until 1953. World-renowned agronomist Artie Gustafson, a one-time Lewiston mayor, experimented with the genetics of peas in the basement laboratory. The seed company built warehouses nearby at 5th and Beachy Streets, and later installed a sorting plant at 2nd and Beachy. It employed as many as 300 people. Means was a major advocate of the streetcar line that by 1915 linked Lewiston's 21st Street with Clarkston at 13th Street in Highland for 13 years. The line ran down along Main Street, one block south of the Means Building. But he eventually saw the handwriting on the wall, as in 1928, he watched as the streetcars began to give way to buses, taxis, and automobiles. "That's progress for you," he said. The Iceman thought he had a monopoly until they invented the refrigerator. Regardless, this was a man of passion, with abilities to match. His career fields included merchandising, banking, agriculture, transportation, and real estate. He was known throughout Idaho for his business acumen. He even dallied in politics, becoming a state legislator. Throughout his 75 years of residence between Lewiston, Genesee, and Orofino, he was always a proponent for the betterment of his communities, a town booster, and he never gave up on one of his very favorite projects. In 1918, he began pestering state and federal officials for a highway route through the Locksaw River Canyon between Lewiston and Missoula, urging quick completion of the 23 miles which remained to be built. Year after year, he'd advocated first an open channel and later the construction of power navigation dams on the Lower Snake. In the late 20s, he was campaigning mightily for a railroad down the Snake River from Weezer to Lewiston. The Interstate Commerce Commission even held a hearing here to compel the Union Pacific to extend its line, which was to no avail. In 1949, he donated 90 acres of East Lewiston land to the city for a public park, while faithfully promoting an endless list of civic enterprises throughout the years. And Means was still campaigning for the completion of the Lewis and Clark Highway, or US 12, even up to the time of his death in 1954. Like many of the day, Mark Means was a transplanted Midwesterner when he came here to sink new roots. The son of an Illinois farm couple, his father, a Union soldier, died in the Civil War siege of Vicksburg in 1863 when Mark was just two. "I think I can remember him leaving home after a furlough," Means said years later. "My mother was crying and I was in her arms." Mark's father had been dead only a short time when his mother also passed away. and he was taken in by an uncle, also a local farmer. A major turning point in the boy's life occurred a few years later when his uncle acquired 2 carloads of Clydesdale draft horses. The big beasts had been imported into Illinois by a neighbor. The man had discovered a good market for the animals and then glutted it. When supply exceeded demand and the man complained to Mark Mean's uncle that his business was on the rocks, the sympathetic uncle conceived the idea of selling the horses out on the West Coast. He quickly took 2 carloads of Clydesdales off the man's hands. Mean's uncle packed suitcases for himself and his nephew, and off for San Francisco they went with their team of horses. At California, they put the animals on a steamer bound for Portland. That was 18-year-old Mark Mean's first glimpse of the West Coast, and it was life-changing. The horses were sold quickly at the Oregon State Fair at Salem, and as it turns out, Mark's uncle started back to Illinois without Mark. Means elected to stay further west and meandered alone up the Columbia to the Blue Mountains of eastern Oregon. He worked there for a time as a surveyor for a sawmill operator, then left for a job with the Northern Pacific out of Rathdrum, locating water tanks and station houses along a new railroad route. When the job ended, Means and a buddy bought some horses and zigzagged southward across the Palouse Prairie, landing eventually at Julietta, a town at the time with but a single log building. They spent the night there, and the next morning came to Lewiston.
The Snake River Gazette with Keith Warnock.
By the time he first arrived, in September of 1881, the gold camps had been milked dry. The flat stretch of land known as Jawbone Flat, and later our twin city of Clarkston, didn't amount to much. Mostly sagebrush, jackrabbits, and a wooden shack. For months, Means carried mail between Lewiston and Annatone, the first carrier on the route to switch from horseback to buckboard. Then he took a job on the river log drive up the Clearwater to the lumber camps. Part of his work in the woods was keeping the accounts in a camp commissary, which dispensed chewing tobacco, boots, and iron pants. This is where the direction of Means' career switched yet again. Prominent Lewiston banker and merchant J.P. Vollmer was so impressed with the young man's work that he went out of his way to introduce himself. Little did Means know what that would mean later. When the young accountant returned to Lewiston a short time later and took a job he didn't like in a general store, he went to Vollmer for a better job and got it. He worked for Vollmer for about 10 years, both in his Lewiston bank and in a general store, which he operated at Genesee. When Vollmer opened a branch of his Lewiston bank at Genesee, he named young Mr. Means as manager. Meanwhile, Means continued operating the general store, and when Vollmer decided to close the store, Means turned down an offer to become manager of the Genesee Bank. The financial downturns of 1893, which destroyed most of the banks between Lewiston and Spokane, had scared him, even though Vollmer's banks had survived. And for more than a decade, Means had been making friends and increasing his knowledge of business and banking. The time had come, he told Vollmer one day in 1896, to strike out on his own. He quit his job, walked across Genesee's Main Street, and opened his own general store, putting shelves and a few fixtures in a rented building, and he stocked it full with general merchandise and farm equipment. The store was profitable, and Means found the funds to expand the business. Soon there were stores at Orofino and Lewiston, and a bit later, an independent Orofino bank, showered with healthy deposits from the loggers and farmers of the Upper Clearwater. In 1906, on an impulse to plunge into real estate, he built a business block on property owned by his wife at 4th and D Streets, and he continued to occupy an office in that building long after he had shed himself of his other businesses. That is, until his final illness removed him forever from his swivel chair. There, as Stephen Branting writes, at 203 4th Street, in a dark little office full of the clutter of decades, Mark Means happily sat through the final months of his life, smoking cigarettes in a long holder and waving through the window to people passing by. Nearby, on an old roll-top desk, he kept his numerous scrapbooks. He said many years after he first rode into town that the decision to stay here came with no regrets. And from that dark office, at age 92, his eyes were still on tomorrow.
The Snake River Gazette with Keith Warnock.
From this week in 1944 in the Lewiston Morning Tribune. Part of an address by a Lieutenant General Somerville, commanding Army Service Forces, to his troops. Victory is never cheaply bought. It is only a means to an end. What is that end? What are we fighting for? We fight for simple things, for the little things that are all important. We fight for schools built on a foundation of books, not bayonets. We fight for town meetings, for open doors to cathedral, church, and synagogue. We fight to organize for any decent purpose, for labor, for employers, for the Grange and the Legion and the ladies' clubs, for lodge meetings in full regalia. We fight for our candidate for sheriff and for the right to be sorry we elected him and say so. We fight for the editor's right to say the wrong thing if he thinks it's right. We fight for the right to work at jobs of our choosing, to read the books we want to read, to listen to the music that pleases us, without regard to the race or nationality of the composer. We fight for free radio, for the right to listen to what we want and turn off what we don't want. For these things, we fight. Speaking of that major project that revolutionized the Twin Cities, and for which Mark Means is largely responsible, from 111 years ago, the Lewiston Morning Tribune headline, "Citizens Unite to Build Clarkston Street Railway." It says the Clarkston and Vinland people have endorsed the plan of constructing a 4.5-mile electric railway system. The proposed loop line is from the bridge up Main and 6th to Chestnut, west to 15th, south to Highland, east to 8th, north to Chestnut. Once a line is decided upon, the committee proposes financing the project by first having each landowner fronting the selected streets of the route to contribute at least 50 cents per front foot of their property. That would finance about half the project. The other half would be covered by those owning property near but not fronting the route. These people would pay on the basis of how close they are to the streets on the route. It was brought out, it says, that the assessment against property could not be made compulsory, but in the event property owners along a certain street would not support it, the location would be changed to a street that would. It doesn't say this in the article, but it's kind of like pay up or shut up. According to the committee, 24,000 feet of 35-pound rail at 55 gross tons per mile comes in at a cost of $10,622. At 9,000 railroad ties, countless spikes, all the other tools and labor, $46,265. The Lewiston-Clarkston Improvement Company believes the line could count on 350,000 passengers a year. This based on the number of people who crossed the Lewiston-Clarkston Bridge the last year it was operated as a toll bridge. Just another little slice of LC Valley history. On the next Gazette, more amazing, true local stories of the people who have shaped the core of our Twin Cities.
Telling the stories of local heroes, little-known facts, and a trip down memory lane that brings the rich history of the place we call home to life. The Snake River Gazette with Keith Warnock is a KOZE podcast broadcast.